I'd like to call to order the meeting of a Finance and Administration Committee. Today is Monday, May 14th, 2018, and I'll take the roll. I'm here, Carmella Corsini.
Russ Vasquez.
Susan Conti.
Okay, we have a quorum, and also in attendance at the meeting is Village Administrator Eric Palm and Joan Brock, the Finance Director. And we have trustees here as well. The purpose for the meeting, we have some items on the agenda. The first thing I want to do is to see if there's any public comment, and I don't see any, so we'll move beyond that. We have one set of minutes from September 27th of 2017. We just have one change on the second page just to complete that second paragraph, the section that talks about discussion about future meetings. We would be including reviewing tax levy and a review of the village's pension funding policy. So I'm going to insert those three words into that. And if I can get a motion to approve the September 27th, 2017 minutes with the amendment.
I move to approve the minutes from September 27th, 2017.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Okay, so those minutes are approved, and then we have two more sets that Eric is working on. Maybe they'll be, we could do that at the village board meeting next time.
November 2nd and...
And I have July 25th of, January 25th
January,
of
right.
2018. Okay. Okay, so the main purpose of our meeting tonight is to have Todd of Lauterbach and Amen back again. This Todd Schroeder is our actuary, and this will be the third presentation. We contracted with Lauterbach and Amen back in the fall to do a subsequent review of our 2015 pension funding policies. We said that we were going to review those after a period of time when we went through the transition period, and so he prepared some review of the pension funding policies. We had the first conversation about what expectations we had about where we were going, where we were heading, and gave you some parameters as to what we wanted you to take a look at. And then we came back in January and met with the pension boards, for both the police and fire pension boards, and had an in-depth discussion about assumptions and funding levels and things of that nature. And tonight you're back to give us our final actual funding policies that we're going to hopefully recommend to the village board for approval at the meeting this evening. So without further ado, I'd like to have Todd maybe stand up and give us an update, and he has some material for his presentation.
So this is just a hard copy of what's up on the screen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No.
You guys want one?
No, thank you. I'm okay.
All right, what I'll cover tonight, a lot of this material will be review for folks who have kind of been through the wars, certainly, of this process. We're going to review, again, what funding policy is, just a real brief, what's the difference between funding policy and the assumption side. We're going to look at kind of where we came from as part of this process, starting back in 2013, 2014 to today. We're going to take a look ahead with our projections as well under the new funding policies to show what we anticipate happening going forward. And then certainly I can take any questions that anybody has as well about the process. So real quick, when we talk about funding policy, we're really talking about the core components that define how we pay for our pensions. So this is our actuarial cost method. This is our, looks like it's advancing automatically, I apologize for that. This is how we're going to handle our unfunded liability, and this is how we're going to value our assets for purposes of pension funding. So the parameters that go into how we're going to pay for our expected benefits going forward. Our general themes as we take a look back from 2014 to 2017, there are a few key things that happened during that time period we'll talk about. One was related to the investment return slash the market environment. Certainly the market was interesting during that time period. It remains interesting, but that had an impact on where we came from 2014 to today. Mortality, there was some information that came out in 2016, not only regarding current mortality for folks that are part of pension plans, but also how that mortality is going to improve going forward. So we'll see some impact of that. And then just general actuarial experience, things that happened in the short term, gains and losses that we expect to kind of wash out over the longer term when it comes to pension funding. So first we're going to talk a little bit about where we came from. And in each of these charts, you'll see there's three pages. We've got a couple charts like this in here where we've got three pages of information. We'll have firefighters pension fund on the first page, police pension fund on the second, and then the combined on the third page. What we're doing on this first section is just kind of walking through where we're at 4/30/14, kind of where we expected that contribution to go versus where that contribution actually went from 4/30/14 to 4/30/17 in this process. So for example, on the fire slide, you can see either in the packet or on the screen up here, our contribution was kind of running along for a couple years as expected. It started to deviate more and more as we hit 4/30/16 and 4/30/17. April 30, 2016 was when we did a review of the assumptions that we do on an every four-year basis or so, and we'll get a little more into that in a moment. And then into 4/30/17, you can see our contribution recommendation, our full contribution recommendation at April 30, 2017 was just under $1.4 million at the 1399. 187 versus the projected that was just under 1.2 million, 1,184,450. So there's a difference of about $215,000 related to the fire pension. If we run through the same thing on the police pension side, we'll see that things tracked a little more closely to expectation as we went through this process from 2014 to 2017. And when we hit 2017, we had a projected of about 1,454 from 2014 versus where the contribution was coming in just under 1.5 million. So there's about a $40,000 difference between the projected contribution on the police pension fund side and how the contribution actually played out over the four-year period. So you throw those together, it's about 200. Bottom line, far right-hand side, bottom row there, it's about a $250,000 difference and where the contribution came in versus where the projected contribution was as of 4/30/2014. Again, three key factors I mentioned earlier. Market returns, certainly on the fire pension fund side, the market returns were different than on the police pension side and generally led to a higher contribution requirement over the period. We have an expected rate of return on assets for the process on the fire side of 7% for these past 4 years. And any differences between the actual returns and those expected returns become part of our contribution requirement. So that's one factor you'll see, and we'll put a number to that in a moment. Actuarial experience. This is the experience not only of how some of the demographics played out over time, folks retiring, becoming disabled, things like that, but also our assumption study and new assumptions that were put into place in 2016 as part of this process. Most of the assumptions had a very minor impact that we put in 2016 on the contribution. The one that had a big impact was the mortality assumption. Our mortality that we put in 2016 was based on a study that was done and completed at the end of 2014 by the Retirement Plans Experience Committee, which is a subcommittee of the Society of Actuaries. They study pension plans, they've got a large amount of data, and they pull in mortality experience for us. The mortality experience itself in terms of where we were at in 2016 versus that table in 2016 was very similar. The one wrinkle and the other thing that study gave us was called a fully generational metric to try to project how mortality was going to improve going forward. So rather than wait 5 years, 10 years, 15 years for the next mortality table, we incorporated into this process parameters to project that mortality improvement going forward. So when the next study is released, it could be, rumor has, maybe the end of this year, early next year, we could have another population mortality study. Sometimes they go, again, 10 or 15 years between studies. Instead of waiting for that study to come out and tell us that people are living longer and then playing catch up with this process, we now, starting in 2016, we're anticipating that as part of this process. So we've got some parameters from that 2014 study on mortality that help us project mortality improvement going forward. And that was the piece that had the bigger impact on the contribution. We're not only looking at how, in the upcoming evaluations, we won't only look at how mortality is in 2018, but also what mortality looks like in 2028, 2038, and so forth as we spin that forward.
Todd, can I ask a real quick question?
Yes.
Who governs or who decides how that mortality table is implemented? So, you know, the example I always give is that there was that mortality table back in the 70s that ruled the day for many, many years, probably to a fault, right?
Yeah.
And then we go ahead and there's a new one implemented right around the same time the state law changed. And so the only thing that gives me a little trepidation with this is we're trying to set goalposts so that we can make, the Village Board of Trustees can make informed policy decisions on what to do, and then all of a sudden the goalposts change, right? They move. And so I guess I'm trying to understand better who determines that we're going to follow this new mortality table. Is that something just as an actuarial policy you decide, or can you walk me through how that decision's made?
Yeah, so it's part of the recommendation we make with respect to assumptions. Certainly with things like investment returns and so forth, there are your professional investment folks you rely on for that. We come in and make recommendation on things like mortality, retirement tables, disability tables, and that's based on the study that we do of the Illinois police and fire population. Ultimately, with anything like a mortality table or the approach to selecting a mortality table, it comes down to actuarial standards of practice. And especially when you get into like the Government Accounting Standards Board reporting, that's something the auditors will check into as well. So when these new population mortality tables are released, there was one, the one in 2014 replaced the one that was from the year 2000, so there's a 14-year gap there. When the new tables come in, essentially it's on the, to recommend a table that's not based on the current mortality requires some sort of information for that. So we do study our Illinois police populations and our Illinois fire populations from the mortality side based on the amount of data that we have from the clients we work with, not only in the actuarial side, but with some of our other service lines. Our data is roughly 50%, what's called 50% credible, meaning we can believe our Illinois data 50%. So we combine our Illinois data with our national data. That certainly is allowable under actuarial standards of practice. We, outside of that, going with a table, let's say from 2000, sticking with the RP 2000, or going back to 1971, which was being done with a lot of funds up through 2010, requires some sort of backup for that.
Right.
And so ultimately, it becomes a recommendation by the actuary to the user of the report. If you elected, let's say, an older mortality table, I'm not sure it would pass audit at this point. That's where they come in and start asking, why are you using RP 2000, or why are you using the 1971 mortality? I know those questions weren't asked a lot in the past, but it's something I know that's being pushed through the audit standards as well with respect, especially with the, when the new GASBs came out about
four years ago. Table you're using like proprietary to Lauterbach and Amen?
It's unique to Lauterbach and Amen. I mean, the information's out there that we're using. It's a combination of the most recent population mortality that's available with our mix with the data that we have to the extent we can.
So I'm just, I guess what I was trying to ask is it's not released by the National Association of Police and Fire Actuarial Group. Okay, it's something that you create based on pulling information from different areas.
Correct, yeah. The RP 2014 study that came out, one of the things they did in the process of completing that national mortality table is they pulled out all of our public sector employees from this. So it's based on private sector pension plans, which means police, fire, teachers, all other kind of government employees were all pulled out of the study. So we've come in and try to give some of that flavor to it with the data that we have, to the extent we can, based on the amount of data we have. There is a study that's in place right now that's based just on public sector employees from a national perspective. That's the one that's rumored to come out at the end of this year. So I wouldn't hold my breath. Certainly, if it got out by the end of this year, we probably wouldn't be incorporating it until 2 years from now as part of any study that we did, just because we need to take a look at it, see what it means. But supposedly that table is going to give us a national perspective on public safety, teachers, and then everybody else. So kind of three tables is what they're talking right now. So that's the next one I would anticipate to come out.
Okay.
Because we have mortality improvement built into this process, it shouldn't provide the shock to the system that a more recent update has provided as part of the pension funding process.
Thank you.
So just to follow up on Eric's question, so if another actuary in this area may not be using the same data that you are. So, I mean, I guess maybe his question and my question too is, you know, what's the variance there? I mean, is there a large fluctuation that would cause these types of, you know, expectations to jump this much?
I think the main variance right now, so we have mortality improvement built into our process. I've seen others, actuaries that have, let's say they'll take the 2000 table and they'll put mortality improvement in there up through 2018, but won't assume any mortality improvement going forward, for example, as part of the process. So there is some of that out there. I mean, in my professional opinion, if you read the standards of practice, it says, you know, you have to address, at this point, you have to address mortality improvement in the future. To leave it out at this point would suggest that you looked at something or there's some data out there that tells you that mortality is not going to improve in the future for the group that you're studying as part of this process. But that is one of the differences I still see out there. Department of Insurance hired a national actuarial firm to complete a study of their assumptions right at the end of last year, or the study was completed right at the end of last year, updating a study they had done in 2012. This firm is bringing mortality improvement into the process for the reports that are issued by the Department of Insurance. And I suspect it's something you're going to see coming in from the other actuaries that work in the space as well. So you'll see a little more uniformity at that point. But I would say in terms of the places we're not uniform, it's the mortality improvement is the big one. If you've got an actuary that says mortality is not going to improve beyond your evaluation date, so 2017, 2018, and you got another one that says it is, that's going to cause the biggest discrepancy in results. At this point, I would suspect the ones that are saying it's not, they have never used it yet, and I would suspect that they're going to start at some point. They may be waiting for this next table to come out before they start including that, but I can't say for sure what goes behind that. But I think under the standards, again, there's not the information out there to suggest that the mortality is not improving in these populations. The same table was used from the early 1980s all the way through 2011. So almost a 30-year period, the same table was used by many pension funds and by the Department of Insurance in the reports that they issued. But what we found then was there was a lot of catch-up that had to be done at that point. Mortality had improved during that time period.
So you would say that, in your opinion, your firm is being more proactive by
Correct.
Including these?
Yeah, you're going to see more of that. You're going to see more of the mortality improvement coming through just because I think we have to.
Okay. Thank you.
So if we jump into what this means in terms of numbers, so we looked at the changes in the contribution from 2014 to 2017, both on an expected basis and on an actual basis over time. And if you look through those time periods and kind of bottom line it, for the fire pension fund, we've got about $116,000 for actuarial experience, about $111,000 related to asset experience, and about $28,000 related to contribution experience. That actuarial experience brings in not only what's happened within the populations, but also brings in these assumption changes from 2016, again, with mortality improvement being the biggest one. as part of that. If you look at the police side, I think it was a overall we saw a smaller number there. These are the components on the police side. We saw a 32,000 increase related to actuarial experience. We saw actually a slight pullback in the contribution related to the investment experience over the 2014 to 2017 period, and a similar $29,000 on the contribution experience over that time. And again, third slide gives you kind of a grand total between the two.
And Todd, remind me again, the actuarial experience makes up, really reflects the mortality table change.
Correct.
The asset experience is essentially the investment.
That's correct.
And then what factors into the contribution experience?
Contribution experience is basically timing between when the dollars actually come in versus when they're calculated for the process, through the levy process.
Right.
We were also contributing transition plan amounts, so then our contributions were lower than what was.
Right. That's correct. Good point.
Yep. Right. Okay.
So that was kind of our look from 14 to 17. So what we're going to get into now is where we're looking at going forward in terms of this process. A couple overriding things that came in. One was looking for a little more uniformity in the process. At the time we started this process, I know there were two different actuaries in place on two pension funds and kind of two different situations we were moving from and going forward. But we are trying to move to a more uniform approach with respect to the pension funding and even to some extent on the assumption side of the equation. And no transition. We went through a transition period from 14 to 17 to try to get us from point A in 2014 to point B in 2017. And we're no longer looking at transition type parameters as part of this process. So key updates, I mentioned there's a difference between assumptions and funding policy. From an assumption standpoint, the long-term investment return is being used as 7% as part of the process. And the demographic assumption, so this is retirement, mortality, disability rates, termination rates, things like that, is based on recommendations from the Lauterbach and Amen study. Again, we do that on an every four-year basis. We did one in 2012. Did one in 2016, so I would anticipate probably 2020 we'd be looking at that again. If something came up that was big, we could certainly look at that sooner as part of the process. From an actuarial standard standpoint, you typically don't want to go beyond 5 years without at least reviewing the assumptions to see if they're still appropriate for the process.
And that study, is that a localized study? Is that a national study?
Good question. This is a study of Illinois Police and Fire Pension Funds. And we do separate them, so we've got a separate set of assumptions for police officers versus what we have for firefighters. We looked at, in 2016, we looked at 316 total pension funds in Illinois. About 170 or so were police pension funds and roughly 140 that were fire pension funds.
I don't understand something. Why are there so many studies? Why isn't there a standard one in Illinois that does one for all?
Ultimately, when the state of Illinois did a study back in, it was like 1982, 1983, it was used by a lot of pension funds for this process. The problem became is that there's no mandate under the state of Illinois to actually do that. So from time to time, they'll come in and they will review the assumptions and they'll update the assumptions in their process. It turns out from that point in time, they went almost 30 years before they updated it. Which again, if you're going outside 5 years without reviewing it, you're not really keeping up with the process. So the last time Illinois updated theirs, they went from 2012 to 2017. So they went right at that 5 year mark, which is certainly a better mark, but there's no mandate for the state to continue to do that. So if they were to go 6, 7, 8, 10 years, things could get stale without reviewing it, which is why we try to just do a regular review every 4 years to try to stay current. From a funding policy standpoint, we're looking at level dollar payments towards our unfunded liability, trying to smooth this out on a dollars basis going forward, as well as a 90% funding target by 2040, which matches the state mandate for funding target, albeit they do it under a different method that artificially lowers the liability a little bit. So this is a little more aggressive 90% funding target that's in there. And then doing the five-year smoothing on the assets. So what we do when the markets, every April 30, we look at what the market value of assets have done. We take the any excess or deficiency to our expectation, and we spread that out over a five-year period for funding purposes. So in any given year that we're calculating a contribution, we're taking in pieces of the last 5 years of market experience into that, really just trying to smooth out the process from a funding standpoint. So here we'll throw some numbers into it, kind of the looking forward numbers, and we've got it out to 2022 here. This is the, again, we got a fire side, a police side, as well as a combined side. If you look at the fire side, we're looking in the 18 levy, about a 12% increase in the contribution, and the 19 levy, about a 5.3% increase. 2024.3%, and then you start to see some of the leveling off impact, the 1.1% in 2021 and 2022 going forward. And some of that is just based on the residual investment experience, because we do have this kind of rolling five-year period we're looking at. Everything that's happened in the last 5 years is still kind of working its way through the contribution, so that's part of what we see coming through here, and why when we get out to 2021 we start to see a bit of a leveling out. On the police side, in the 18 levy, it's about a 2.3% increase. And again, police doesn't have as much residual market losses from the last 5 years to kind of work into the process. So you see some of that leveling out happening a little sooner. And then, you know, 1% to 2% going forward after that. So the leveling out side of this, it's twofold. It's the level dollar payment towards the unfunded liability, which is creating that leveling process in the long term on the dollar side. We also have the inclusion of tier two employees coming in. So you see your normal costs will be dipping a bit as a percent of pay over time as more and more tier two employees come into this process as well. And again, slide 19 just gives us our combined impact on our projected levy going forward. So we're really looking to probably get north of that $3 million mark and be stabilizing or minimizing the increases at that point as you look out to 2022 here. So again, just kind of to summarize some of the key results, the contributions are still impacted by what's happened in the past, you know, 4 to 5 years in the market, and that'll work its way through. Our stabilizing period is coming up in, I'd say, 3 to 4 years from a dollar basis, and stabilizing meaning the, you know, 1 to 2% increases in contribution on an annual basis coming through. That's after we get through the next few years as part of this process. And funded percentage, I think we had that, at least on the individual slides, we have that. Funded percentage, as you go from point A, which is around 50 to 60% right now, to point B, our target, which is 90% in the future. What you'll see with funded percentage, because we have the greatest amount of unfunded liability that exists today, you'll see the slowest improvement in that funded percentage here in the near term, and then it'll start to accelerate as this policy continues forward in the long term. So from a fire pension standpoint, we see the funded percentage dipping a little bit, and then it's starting to kick back up in a few years and work its way back up. And that's because of the amount of unfunded liabilities, its greatest right now. And on the police pension side, you see you've already started some of the anticipated uptick with the moderate increases expected going forward. And then those increases actually grow over time to get us to our 90% target. So I guess next step ultimately is approval of the funding policy. Last time I mentioned, and I left them in here, I don't think there was much interest in looking at some of the risk management stuff, but from a disclosure standpoint, I left them in here. These things can still be, you know, these projections can still be impacted by market returns and incidents of disability and pay increases more or less than expected, certainly over time. We can look at what some of those might be if you were interested in looking at that, but outside of that, were there any questions regarding either the kind of the look back or the look ahead? with respect to the contributions.
So I also want to just point out that Joan prepared a memo just to summarize basically, you know, what we were doing as far as policy before, the actual levy year budgets and amounts that were contributed, and then what our policy that we hope to implement now for both funds will look like if we approve the funding policies tonight. So I don't know if you want to open it up to questions on either the presentation or the information on the memo. I guess to summarize too, after our last meeting, the fire pension, is it not the investment advisor, right?
Yeah, the fire pension board.
Right.
Since the last time that we met back in 2014, now has the same investment consultant as the police pension board. So they have the same investment consultant
right
now. Prior to that, they had two different ones. So it really, and they have the same ability to invest money. So that was the thought process behind making their assumed rate of returns the same as opposed to two different.
So it just seems overall that, I mean, this is going to give us continuity between both funds if we go to the level dollar funding, because it's actually better in the long run that we're paying off that unfunded liability faster, so the funds will be healthier later. So that's the one reason why we recommend the 90% funding level dollar, and then the 7% rate of return, just to make it pretty equal between funds so that we're treating them both the same.
And I know the last couple meetings, I think the investment consultant's here as well and gave some perspective with respect. Ultimately, with an expected rate of return on asset assumption, it's something you're looking, like any other assumption, something you're looking to get ultimately in the long term. Short term can be more volatile certainly than the long term, but she can provide certainly perspective to that as well.
Yeah, and I think that in general, that's what we're looking for, is we're not looking, I mean, obviously we're going to have fluctuations on an annual basis with the market and other factors, but we want to take a long-range approach to how we're funding these. And in my opinion, and after, you know, reviewing all these things, the going to the level funding or level dollar funding method is going to be much more advantageous to the funds. And then, you know, the 7%, I mean, it's kind of a throw of the dart. Nobody could predict the volatility in the markets, but you want to look at what the long-term average returns are going to be for the funds and the life of the funds, so that you're going to have enough money there to pay the benefits when they're needed. So, you know, we were comfortable with that recommendation. And the fire pension fund was on board with us. The police pension board was not. You know, they had a little bit of a difference in whether to go to the 7% to the 6.75, but at this point, the village policy would be that we're going to implement 7% for both funds. And if they want to do some additional work on their own with, you know, future actuarial studies, you know, that would be something that they would have to implement on their own, as well as a funding policy that they would have to implement on their own. So I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that.
No, I think the comment on the investment returns is a good one. And I don't remember the individual's name that was here who advises for both.
The broker.
Investment advisor. It's Antco.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When they were here, I mean, if you go back and listen to that, I mean, I think what we're doing for a long-term 30-year or 40-year lookout is certainly acceptable. You know, I think one of the things I would always advise pension board is to resist this knee jerk of trying to adjust every time the market does something and it's a little volatile. And then you start, much like about the concern I expressed earlier about the mortality tables, certainly it's always good to follow best practices and get more data and information, but it's got to be balanced against this notion of this reactionary approach, because that's not going to get you anywhere. And if you look at the asset returns over a long period of time, which we're talking about, this is something that's going to live in perpetuity, or we're assuming it is, then I think you need to take that long-term approach. And I know that opinion sometimes isn't shared by all, but I'm certainly comfortable with the approach that we've laid out here today.
In that same vein, we can't change our per-year funding based on the investment experience over a short-term period of time.
Over the last, I don't know what the time frame is, I think maybe since 2011, 2012, our pension, public safety pension contributions have doubled.
Right.
And it's a significant amount of money, and that puts more pressure on the general fund to go ahead and balance the budget each year.
Well, that was my next question. I know that you both have obviously approve our these payments, but as far as the budget's concerned, as far as from now till 2040 is concerned, we feel like the village is in good enough shape to absorb this 30% of our budget, basically, right?
Well,
it's 30% now, but it could be, it's going to get higher.
Right, well, and I think that's the ongoing challenge, right, is that we've been able to balance our budget every year, being very diligent and creative and, again, implementing more best practices. That reaches a point, though, in time where that creates, you run out of creative solutions, right? And so we're starting to crescendo, if you will, into that part of the song here. And so that's what we're moving forward. We have to do something, one, that's sustainable. And again, we've made personnel decisions on the police and fire side, especially on the fire side, of taking two positions and that are sworn, and basically either keeping them vacant or making them non-sworn. So I mean, we're really coming up with as many of those creative solutions as we can. But that's the one thing I wanted to reiterate during our.
Any other option would have to be contractual.
And there are, there's a discussion on whether that's the best service model. Number one, number two, contractually, if you can do that. So there's a lot of other things that go into place with that discussion. But assuming the current service model, this would be the recommendation moving forward.
And going forward, say we reach this nirvana of 90% in 2040, would you anticipate the payments for the pensions to still remain at that same percentage of our budget, or does it ever kind of?
As you hit that point, there would be a significant, theoretically, there would be a significant portion that goes away. One thing to keep in mind is, in the longer term, when you look at funding policy, as this thing gets down to, let's say, 15 years away from that, so 2025. Any new unfunded liability that comes in, or any new market fluctuations or anything else, could be pretty volatile to pay for. So there's some things we would likely look at to try to curb some of that volatility ahead of time, including if you have this big piece that's going to be paid down by 2040, including factoring that into the mix of how we can try to smooth that out, maybe bring it down a bit ahead of time, for example, to balance out other events that have happened potentially, kind of keep the long-term volatility in a good place. But theoretically, if everything worked out perfect year by year and you stayed on this path, there'd be a chunk that dropped off in 2040 related to this payoff, and you'd have about a 10%. You have 90% funded, you have 10% of the liability to deal with at that point.
And I just want to also reiterate that, when we first embarked on this process back in 2014, it was just, we wanted to be proactive with this. We wanted to have, some sustainable opportunity to look at, how the village moving forward was going to ensure that, we're doing the right thing and that we're funding these properly for the long term, and both looking at what the taxpayers, the service to and the levy levels to the taxpayers versus, also making sure that our employees are appropriately taken care of and that we're doing the right thing. So, if you can attest to this, other towns. I mean, I think we've been pretty successful in being proactive in comparison to other municipalities in taking this approach and really studying these and having the both pension funds, you know, working with us. I think it's healthy to have these conversations together so that we're all on the same page and they're all moving in the right direction. So I think it's been a good positive in that respect. So if you want to talk to or speak to, you know, how we are and compared to other towns as far as our positions.
Yeah, certainly funding policy and trying to come together on funding policy became more of a topic of discussion a few years ago when the Government Accounting Standards Board changed all their reporting. But certainly this was taking place, and these discussions were deep into them before those even got implemented at that point, because it is about the funding and the sustainability side of the equation with respect to the funding. So you know, towns that weren't as proactive are trying to do this now. Means they're further down the road. They've had more shortfalls along the way, so they've got a bigger issue to deal with now than you otherwise would have by getting ahead of this a bit. And some of those you've seen them in the paper. So some of them have gotten to a real bad spot with funding. So at least trying to turn that corner and head the right direction has helped certainly curb that. It's still not, obviously, it's still not an easy process, but has helped curb some of that. It could have been much bigger numbers we're talking about today.
So are there any other questions from the committee? I guess the next thing we want to do is just make a recommendation or make a motion to make a recommendation to the full board that we approve the actual funding policy statements for the Village of River Forest Police and Fire Pension Funds. So can I have a motion to
so
do
moved.
And a second. Okay, so all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
No opposed. So what we will do is then at the appropriate time we're going to recommend to the board that we approve the funding policies that were distributed and that we've worked on these last several months. So is there any other business to come before the board at this time?
To adjourn.
Move to adjourn. Second.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you very much.